is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Well, we've had a good week this week, and I appreciate everybody joining us this afternoon. Ray Mondragon, Creation Science Fellowship. Ray is a Bible teacher, an apologist, a student of creation science, and he's a frequent speaker with Creation Science Fellowship.
And a bike rider.
And you're always humping it over here on your bike, even when it's 98 degrees, Ray.
Well, the faster you pedal, the more air conditioning you get.
Well, I don't know. The more sweaty I would get, I'm not sure that would be air conditioning, but... Hey, you staying in good shape. You're keeping the environment clean, and that bike of yours is getting some miles on it.
Well, 2 years ago, I crossed 100,000 miles, so I'm on my second 100,000 miles.
Is that right?
Yep.
And you're keeping track of that?
Oh, every day.
Well, Ray, you have been covering for us when you first started being a regular guest on the program. We were talking about evolution versus creation science. And in that process, you kind of showed us that the theory of evolution really has never raised to the level of being science. But yet every day, I was just watching Channel 7. They refer to evolution. I mean, they speak about it as though it's just
Assumed because of the alternative. The only alternative is you have to face a God and an unbelieving world doesn't want to live up to the reality that someday everyone will have to stand before the Creator. So you have to come up with a substitute theory. And the best they've done is evolution.
And people don't realize that evolution really purposely omits God. It's like, well, God can't possibly exist, so he can't possibly be part of the equation.
Right.
And yet when you look at the data, when you look at a cell, when you look at an organism, when you look at a tree, when you look at fossils, you're seeing there can't be any other explanation except God is the creator.
All the data points in the direction of a creator, and we spent weeks on that. So, yeah, exactly.
You've used a term in recent weeks, historical geology. Now, that's not really a term that a normal geologist would consider themselves, but you're...
No, they would. That would be their description.
But we're using that to talk about a secular approach, a evolutionary approach to geology.
Well, I would consider myself a historical... Well, not a geologist. I'm not trained in that. But right. I would consider myself a historical geologist as well.
Okay.
We believers would have a different perspective on the history of the earth. So we're talking about ancient history. How do you interpret the data that's available in terms of ancient history? And there's two basic approaches.
Well, and I like the fact that it appears to me that creation scientists, people that are believers in God and in Jesus, I believe they have less of a bias. This is my personal opinion. They have less of a bias than someone who just says there can't possibly be a God, so let's make up some other reason all of this stuff came to be. And,
right.
And you know, from a philosophical standpoint, from a theological standpoint, from a logic standpoint, from a mathematical standpoint, and from a scientific standpoint, that doesn't stand up.
No, I don't think it does when you evaluate the data. Now, we're biased as well. I mean, we're biased in that we assume and take it that there is a God and therefore there is a creator and he's revealed himself. So that's our bias. But like you say, once you get into the data itself, I think the data points more in the direction of not only God as a creator, but this area of historical geology. How do you interpret the rock layers that are out there? Historical geologists give them billions or millions and millions of years, adding up to billions. And we believe what is revealed in Scripture concerning a Genesis flood. And if there was a Genesis flood, that opens up another possibility of interpretation of the same data. Same data.
And you hear... And you're a Bible teacher. You're a Bible teacher. You teach in an expository way. Your website, forhisglorynm.com, has all kinds of free information for people. They can go in there and reference it. Of course, there's many, many pastors around town that probably could benefit by just, even if your work would stimulate them looking into it, they would really be blessed.
Well, I would hope so, because most Bible teachers and or theologians are not trained in the sciences. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just a reality. And if you're not trained in it, then you're sometimes intimidated by the overwhelming data, or not data, but theory that you're presented in the media and everywhere else. So, yeah, I would encourage pastors to go to the website, particularly on the creation science material.
So the process over the last year has been, we talked about creation science versus evolution kind of in a general way, the concepts, the philosophies, the perspectives, and then we went into talking about the flood here toward the end of 2019 up until now. And the flood has been looked at in Scripture. In fact, you said that you listened to this a week or so ago. We had Dr. Stephen Collins. He, of course, is a doctor of archaeology and part of the team that discovered the ancient city of Sodom at the Tell al-Hammam site in the Jordan Valley, next to the Dead Sea.
A good friend of mine.
Yeah, and what I like about the fact that you're not only friends, but you don't agree on everything.
Right.
But everything you guys talk about is, there's nothing you would disagree upon that would take away from our faith. Everything you do is showing how the Bible itself, he made a statement. He said that 99% of the Bible is a book of history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously there's a lot of spiritual emphasis, but he believes that the Bible is a book of history, and he spent his life verifying that history.
Right.
And his faith is not just, he doesn't believe a lot just on faith. He believes it because it's true, because he's verified it.
Right. And I'm saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Except I'm saying that science does essentially the same thing. And I would view, for example, the creation of Genesis 1 and 1 as another historical event. The Genesis flood, another.
But so many people criticize this.
Historical event, yes.
People take stories that are historical in the Bible, and they say, oh no, that's mythology, that's an allegory, that's somehow they try to explain it away, and you have pointed out a lot of data. So for example, we're going to be talking about the geological column today, the geologic column.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about, was that deposited over billions of years? Was each layer, you know, so many
millions, 40 million,
whatever.
Et cetera.
I mean, you choose the number.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying that there was a catastrophic event, the worldwide flood. All of the sediment and stuff was churned up because the force of that water had to be awesome.
Greater than tsunami floods that we experience today by magnitudes.
And then as that water dissipated very quickly, it didn't take millions of years for the water to dissipate. You know, the whole event took a year.
According to the chronology in Genesis, it took actually 370 days.
Okay.
And we have two precise beginning dates, and the second one is the ending date.
So you would say that this data that you get from the geologic column, that could have very easily, that catastrophic event, could have laid out all that sediment at one time.
To the Precambrian layer, and that's the evidence. It's a matter of how do you interpret that data, and that's where we differ with the secular historical geologist.
Well, and then on June 10th, here just last month, we were joined by Dr. Linda Walkup. She is a molecular biologist. She does a lot with homeschoolers in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She studies biological molecules like DNA, RNA, and proteins. And she doesn't necessarily study microorganisms, but she's really looking at the really small parts
even
of life.
Even smaller than a one-celled animal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in that interview, if I could take, remind everybody of a takeaway, she's talking about the fact that there were soft tissues from dinosaurs or within dinosaur bones discovered here in the last 20 years. And they're actually able to look at DNA. And then I made a joke, this is Jurassic Park. Yeah. And it really is.
Kind of. Uh-huh.
You know, yeah. you are really able to see DNA strands. And again, when you look at a strand of DNA, I don't care if it's in a dinosaur or an amoeba or a person, you're talking about patterns, math sequences, you know, the I don't have
what the, a DNA molecule is the most complex molecule in the universe.
And that didn't happen by accident.
We would say no, it could not have. Now the evolutionist, you know, has to dance around and try to convince you of that, but just like your computer, which is not even close to the complexity of a DNA molecule, it's ridiculous to think that it would come about by natural means.
My goal really is to equip people that are believers with some basic knowledge of science, some basic knowledge of logic, basic knowledge of what the data is, so that they don't feel like when they're told they left their brain on the stoop that's accurate, because it's not. It's absolutely not accurate. And we have these shows every 4 or 5 weeks because I want to keep telling people. I want them to internalize a lot of the points that you make. So tell me, what does secular science say about dinosaurs?
Well, secular science puts it within the Jurassic layer in the geological column, and they date the end of that about 65 million years ago. So they would date dinosaurs as going extinct about 65 million years ago. So during that millions of years of time, during the Jurassic period, is when these dinosaurs flourished. The secular view is that the Earth near the Yucatan was struck by a comet or a meteor or some extraterrestrial object, and as a result of the turmoil that was created, dust and volcanoes and everything else, the environment changed enough that dinosaurs went extinct, and that's why we don't see them.
You know, some of these claims are made by the folks at the meteor crater as you drive to Phoenix down
right.
on I-40. Yeah, they talk about, you know, that meteor hitting mm-hmm. there. And when you look at that crater, I mean, that had to be a big rock.
And that was a tiny one compared to what some believe the Yucatan crater. Obviously, it's in the water, but yeah, so something very catastrophic, they say.
Yeah. Well, and that it very well may be that meteors hit the Earth. I mean, I don't know that you're disputing that, but you're kind of saying, hey, this dating, where are you coming up with this?
Right.
Ray, there does come a point where we can't know things that happened 500 years ago or 1,000 years ago, can we?
Well, what I've been trying to establish in some of our other interviews is when you're dealing with events, you can't go back. We don't have a time machine. You can't go back and revisit those events. They happened once. Some events have left traces of data, and more recent events, you have written records. Those would be traces of data. And if you have an eyewitness account of a past event, even 1,000 years ago, depending on the reliability of that eyewitness, then you can begin to interpret what happened 1,000 years ago. Now, when we're talking about things like the Genesis flood, we're talking about a few thousand years ago, and there are no written records other than what we have in Scripture, and the cultures that lived after, they left some records as well of memory of a catastrophic flood. In fact, there's over 150 documents relating to various cultures all over the world. In fact, we're not intending to get into that today, but that's another line of evidence. 150 cultures have a flood tradition that they have recorded. So something must have happened in the past.
Ray Mondragon, Creation Science Fellowship, in studio with me this afternoon. I want to remind everybody that this month for Mission New Mexico here on KNKT, we want to bring awareness to Pastor Landall Benally and Calvary Chapel Tolokai up in Gallup. He's doing some amazing work up there. Of course, everyone knows that is really the epicenter of there and in Arizona is the epicenter of the COVID-19 in the United States. I mean, wow. Unfortunately, the Native American culture has been decimated. A lot of people infected, the Navajo Nation in particular. And we talked with Landall on the program a week or so ago, but I want to remind everybody that many people living on the Navajo Nation do not have running water or heat in their homes. You can imagine the difficulty this creates under normal circumstances, let alone while trying to battle a pandemic in one of the worst hotspots in the country. Pastor Landall and his team have been hard at work delivering water, food, firewood, and other care to those in need. Thankful he's not alone. Sagebrush Church, Citizen Church, Calvary Church have teamed up to help purchase food for distribution through Samaritan's Purse. They have set up a food distribution center at a local school gym, actually in the Rehoboth Mission School, Christian School, and there's still much work needs to be done. To learn more about and support this critical initiative, please visit calvarynm.church/missions. It's an amazing thing. We're going to be back with Ray Mondragon right after these messages. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
Hello, this is Chaplain Jim Meyer from High Desert Hospice. I want you to know that we're praying for you and to remind you that you're not alone. In times of crisis and uncertainty, it's important to cling to that which we know, that we're cared for and deeply loved by God. David had this confidence when he wrote in Psalm 28, verse 7, "The Lord is my strength and my shield. My heart trusts in him and I am helped." So from our family at High Desert Hospice to yours, be encouraged.
Here's Ava, the owner of Monroe's.
Dad, I think we're in deep doo-doo.
Is that why everyone keeps buying all the toilet paper?
Actually, New Mexico culture is rich. Plus, Monroe's has red chili, green chili, and the best customers in the world to go with it.
Boy, Dad, you must really love our customers.
I sure do, just like I love you, Stella.
Hey, what about me?
Of course you too, Ava.
Treat yourself to a delicious Monroe's meal. See Monroe's menu at monroeschili.com. Then call in your order to Monroe's on Osuna at 881-4224 or Monroe's downtown at 242-1111 for carryout or free delivery.
This is a fresh thought. Listen up to Levi Lusco.
We all can, to some degree, think of something that was cruelly taken from our hands. And maybe it was not a Mexican beach vacation. Maybe it was someone you loved. Maybe to the COVID-19 virus, or maybe to something else. But you know the feeling of joylessness that's come because of something that was taken from you and snatched from you. And in that situation, Paul says, when you don't feel joyful, the key is gratitude. The key is to, in everything. He doesn't say for everything, give thanks, but in everything. For we deal with things that are not good and we're not to be thankful for, but in those things we can choose to be grateful, to show gratitude. And that gratitude will help us to tap into our joy. Paul, as he give thanks, is modeling for us. You go, how, Paul, do you have a thank you note full of joy? It's because he was writing a thank you note.
For more fresh thoughts, go to levilusco.com.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Ray Mondragon, Creation Science Fellowship, in studio with us today. And as we talk about things like evolution and creation science, and we talk about the geologic column, and again, the details, you don't necessarily have to remember right now. I'm going to point you to a couple of websites. Ray's website is called For, His Glory, NM, for New Mexico.com. A lot of great information. There's some Bible study information. There's resources on creation science. There's college seminary courses, outlines, all kinds of information. And that, I think, you provide for free, right, Ray?
Right. You just visit the site.
Yeah. Well, and that's fun. And then there's Creation Science Fellowship's website, which is CSF, or Creation Science Fellowship, csfnm.com. Again, a lot of great resources there. And you are meeting. You're back to meeting the third Tuesday of every month, and you're meeting out
Faith Bible Church.
Faith Bible Church.
In fact, I'm going to be this month's speaker, and I'm going to talk about the second law of thermodynamics. Now, I hope that doesn't intimidate people, because what I'm actually going to do, there are several passages in Scripture that are full of science. And I'm going to take a passage that gives us the scientific parameters of the second law of thermodynamics. And essentially, I'm going to expound that passage and explain a little bit about the second law.
And so that'll be the third Tuesday of July, the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be, again, at the Faith Bible Church. And that's near the intersection.
Central and Moon, right on the corner.
Central and Moon. What a neat thing that they offer to provide the church for you. And again, I'm sure you're doing a little social distancing and keeping aware of the CDC requirements and everything.
And usually the number of people that we have, there's no problem. So even if we have some extras, there shouldn't be any problem.
And that's
problem.
Free, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we encourage families, homeschoolers. We're trying to get information across, the same kind of information we're doing here.
So, Ray, let's get to the main topic of today. We're going to be talking about the geologic column, geological layers as evidence for the Genesis flood. Where are we going with this?
Well, if you study any geology book, you'll find very early in there a description of the layers that you will see in every location around the world. And these are sedimentary rock. And if you've ever visited the Grand Canyon, you can see that layering so obvious. Well, that kind of layering is everywhere. In fact, I'd like to talk about evidence that you can just go outside the door and you can look at some of that evidence and or go to the Grand Canyon and see that. In fact, a lot of the data I'd like to talk about, you can observe at the Grand Canyon. But here in Albuquerque, if you just look at the Sandia Crest, you can see that top layer that we call the crest. That's a Pennsylvanian layer. And I'll talk some more about that later. So you can see some of this stuff right here in Albuquerque, and you don't have to go very far to see all this layering.
So there's a Pennsylvanian layer in the Grand Canyon also?
Yes.
Okay. So, and that's interesting. How did they name the layers?
Well, historical geologists had to come up with some names, so I'm not sure the history of it all. I'm not a geologist. I just study it. But they named layers in relationship to what they find within them, particularly the fossils. And each layer is identified by the fossils that they contain. They have key fossils or index, what they call index fossils. And if they have a certain percentage of those, they identify it by Jurassic, Pennsylvanian, and all the other layering. So there's this chart, and what I tried to stress several weeks ago, months I think, when we started talking about this, that chart is theoretical. It's nice and neat, and it's representative, at least they would say, of the layers that you can find at any location, but it does not exist in its entirety anywhere on the face of the earth. That's a composite.
So all of those layers are not present in every place all over the world.
Exactly. In fact, the Pennsylvanian is somewhat in the middle. So where are the ones above the Sandia Crest, in other words?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So it's more a theoretical chart. And the theory by the historical geologist is all of these layers were laid down over many, many years, millions of years. For example, the Jurassic, I think it's thick enough that they identify it as 40 million years in time. Pennsylvanian, about the same length of time that it took to form that layer. So they assign these based on assumptions and theories, none of which have been verified or can be verified. You can't go back into the past. We have a different idea. We have a different interpretation of those layers. So what I'd like to do today is give you the data that both sides will evaluate, and I believe that we have a better interpretation of the data that these layers give us in terms of a Genesis flood.
The stage is yours, my friend.
Oh, wow. Well, let me give you just a few. And by the way, if you go to the Grand Canyon, you can see this layering. And I've got, when I do this on a live presentation, I have photographs from the Grand Canyon to illustrate all of these points. And one of the first things that you observe, even if you visit the Grand Canyon, you see a layer. And if you're on one side of the canyon, you can see the layering on the other side. And you can see that those layers extend for as far as you can see in the Grand Canyon. Now, geologists also know that these layers extend in many cases for thousands of miles. In other words, the same kind of material that you can observe in the Grand Canyon, it'll extend all the way to New York State in some cases, all the way into Canada. In fact, an example of one of these blankets close to the surface that you can observe, if you just take a drive up to Santa Fe, do you remember that, La Bajada?
La Bajada Hill, yeah.
That hill? Mm-hmm. You can kind of see a layer there that ends. Now, that's a volcanic layer, but it's also part of what's called the Morrison Formation. And that Morrison Formation, that extends well into Canada and over virtually all of the western states. But this is characteristic of these blankets. They're massive and large, some of them 80-100 feet thick, and generally they have about the same kinds of material, and they would identify them. So that alone speaks of what formed these blankets, something massive perhaps, and we would interpret that these were laid down by the Genesis flood. So that's a better interpretation than the millions of years. How do you get the same material over that same period of time and then drastically different underneath that layer? And you can see the differences in the Grand Canyon. Some of them are whitish. In fact, what they call the bathtub ring, that's a Coconino sandstone. It's a sandstone that has similar composition, and right under it is this red shale, and it's drastically different. What happened? There's no explanation from the historical geologist. So these large blankets argue for something catastrophic happening between. There you go.
So I'm showing Ray right now. My daughter visited the Grand Canyon here about a year ago and took some really neat pictures of the canyon. Mm-hmm. And he's absolutely right. I mean, you can see these layers just clear as a bell.
Right.
And even if you can't visit the Grand Canyon, just going and looking at some pictures on their website would just verify everything you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just crystal clear when you're there to see some of the things that I'll mention here. Another line of evidence. Now, we believe creationists and young earth flood people, we believe that the layers were laid down as a result of the receding waters of the Genesis flood. So initially, all of that material would be swept up by tsunami, in fact, greater than tsunami waves that overtook the continents, ripped up large materials, in fact, entire forests. Coal beds, by the way, those are the remnants of forests that were ripped up and deposited. So these layers would be deposited as a result of the receding waters of the Genesis flood. And the layering would be from a particular point because there is a bottom to it, if you will. It's called the Great Unconformity. Everything above that is radically different from everything below it. Everything above it is sedimentary rock laid down more than likely by water. And each layer, in fact, you can observe this if you see a local flood, you see the same phenomenon. You see different materials, sometimes more coarse material at the bottom and finer material at the top. And you see the same types of characteristics in these blankets in the Grand Canyon.
Ray, I want to stop you for just a second because we're talking about things that I think are very interesting, very encouraging to our faith. But at the same time, I want to make people aware that really our faith is based on one person, Jesus Christ.
Right.
And was he born? Did he live? Did he die for us? Did he raise? Was he in that tomb after 3 days?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was no. They couldn't find him. And that's one of the most well-documented historical facts ever.
Yep.
Well, when we're talking about these issues, in many ways, they're not unimportant. But I would say that philosophy and thinking about these kind of things would be termed an elementary principle of the world. So we don't want people to get discouraged in their faith because if I put you with Steve Collins in a room, you're going to have some differing opinions about some of this stuff.
On minor issues,
yeah,
though.
But
minor
I'm going to,
issues.
But I enjoy the conversation mm-hmm. because it makes people think. And it you guys are friends and you're believers. And there are things that we can't know
right.
for sure.
Right.
You know, that's why I'm excited one of these days. Somebody told me the other day that they can't wait to stand before God and say, Lord, would you mind replaying
yeah.
that, whatever it was, you know, the
sure.
receding water so we could actually see what happened. You know, I think that's going to be a fun thing
oh,
at
absolutely.
Some point.
Yeah.
And I just think it's going to be a blast mm-hmm. in eternity with God.
Yeah, really we're not do. Just going to be sitting in clouds plucking a harp or something. I think we're going to be very active, and I think we're going to be very involved, and I think we're serving and worshiping and enjoying. I think there's lots of things that will go on when we go to be with the Lord.
Yeah, it's going to be a very fulfilling time, and it's something to...
More fulfilling than anything we'll experience here.
Yeah, so I don't want people to get a focus on... I don't want this to become an idol. I don't want this to become mm-hmm. some perspective that discourages you in some way. This is just a fun conversation. You know, we're talking about tough subjects... You know, all the time. Monday, I had Ernie C. DeBaca, the CEO of the Hispano Chamber of Commerce. He's the president and CEO, and he was standing before people in Civic Plaza explaining how Hispanic-owned and white-owned and black-owned businesses in our community, small businesses, were going to be harmed if we were required to do this paid sick leave bill. Well, to me, that's such a heavy topic right now because, you know, these poor business people that are down on Central trying to rebuild their businesses after windows got shattered, you know, during some of the protests, now they're confronted with another big thing. Well, you know, thankfully, the city council did not pass that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that had a lot to do with what Mr. C. DeBaca did. And I think it, you know, we had the... You know, the Restaurant Association and several others down there.
Mm-hmm.
So I only bring that up because we're in a dialogue. We're part of this world. We need to be loving. We need to be respectful. We need to honor all men. And we're having a conversation that I think stimulates a lot of thought. It's going to motivate you to go to Scripture to verify this. Mm-hmm. We give out the website because there's not one thing that we want to say on this program that we want people to believe just because we said it.
Absolutely, yeah. We want to encourage people to look at the data and all of the data, whether it be from science or history or any area of study, if you look at it from a biblical worldview, you're going to see that that biblical worldview is reinforced and supported.
We will be back with Ray Mondragon. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
Ready to radically upgrade your prayer life? You have come to the right place if you are ready for dangerous prayers.
These are not easy prayers. These are not safe prayers. These are not benign prayers. We're calling them dangerous prayers, but they're dangerous in a good way. Most people I know in this part of the world, most people's prayers are way too safe.
That's Craig Rochelle from his book, Dangerous Prayers. And this is our summer resource offer. Get it if you are ready to get out of your comfort zone.
What I want to do is I want to arm you with some prayers that are not safe to pray. When you pray these prayers, you're really asking God to do something that will often take you out of your comfort zone.
Unlock your prayer potential with Craig Rochelle's book, Dangerous Prayers. It's our gift to you when you give $35 or more today to help keep this ministry on the air. Request your copy when you give online securely at connectwithskip.com/offer, or you can call 800-922-1888.
Here's Mike Fabares, Bible teacher on Focal Point.
When Christ's earthly ministry was over, he gathered his disciples together and he commissioned them. And by extension, every generation was commissioned with the same thing. We're to be serious about propagating the gospel. The central verb in that passage, it's straightforward. It's noticeably uncomplicated. It's just simply to make disciples. Now, the three words that surround it remind us of the phases of that. We're to be baptizing them, which means we've got to reach them with the gospel. We've got to then teach them to observe everything that Christ commanded. And then we've got to get out there and do what the disciples did. They went out to make these disciples. So Christ gave us a clear directive, a promise to be with us until the work is done. So let's get out there today and start working to get that job done.
Get more hard-hitting, straight-up Bible teaching when you listen to Focal Point's half-hour program. Consider Pastor Mike Fabares as your personal Bible coach. He'll take you through the paces right here on this station. And listen anytime at focalpointradio.org.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
All right, Ray, before we took the break, told us that we could walk right outside our door and we could see things geologically that support the
Genesis flood.
Genesis flood, the historical Genesis flood described in the Bible. So I don't want you to walk outside right now. I want you to finish listening to the radio. But when the radio show's over, what could we see outside, Ray, if we take a walk outside?
Well, we mentioned if you just look up at the crest, you're going to see a layer, and it's pretty thick. You can see our layer. That is one of the layers that you can identify on the geological column. And the crest only has that one layer. And below that layer, in a moment, I'm going to tell you that there's a drastic difference between what's below that. And all you have to do is go out and take a look at it, and you'll see that there's a drastic difference between. It's not layered below it. So we'll get to that. But I want to get to some other things first. So let me get you kind of interested in some of this other evidence. Some of this, like we were saying, comes from the Grand Canyon. You can observe these layers that we described in the last segment. But every so often, after these layers were laid down, you have geological activity, you have movement, sometimes plate movements, and you have displacements. And you can see in some places, not only at the Grand Canyon, but elsewhere, but it's so vivid there that you can obviously see what geologists call folding. Folding. Now, the geologists, the historical, secular geologist really doesn't have a good explanation for these, because according to their theory, if these were laid down over millions and millions of years, then you should have, when you have these displacements, evidence of cracking and breaking and shattering. And in fact, all of the evidence of these what they call folding, all the evidence point to that these layers were what they call plastic or soft. In other words, they hadn't hardened into rock yet. There's no explanation from the historical geologist to explain why these layers or the folds folded at a time when the layers were soft. And we're talking about not just one layer. We're talking sometimes of multiple layers, like what we talked about.
Okay, so just logically, let me see what you're saying here. So if I take four or five blankets and lay them down on each other,
right?
I can fold them.
No,
and they will be
not fold in that sense. That's the name that they identify. But you might have a displacement. So you have one layer here, and then you have a kind of a transition, and in that transition,
so like a fault line or something,
yes,
in the middle of those layers,
right?
So if it took billions of years for each layer to lay down, that fault wouldn't affected all of those layers at the same
time.
Well,
you'd have a radical break, but instead you have a layer that kind of folds and then goes this way. Your audience can't see what
you got to make us see it, Ray. You got to do play by play here.
It makes like let's say a Z, where you have a top mm-hmm. part of the Z and then the bottom part of the Z, and then in between you have, that would be the fold.
But you see the same layers.
Yes.
In that
yes.
upright portion of the
yes.
Z. So that couldn't have happened.
You would expect a rapid break or a sharp break mm-hmm. if it were millions of years.
Yeah. So again, just logic, you know, there's you
probably evidence.
Got a few mathematicians on that problem as well.
Bits and pieces. Another line of evidence, if you go to the Grand Canyon, and by the way, the Grand Canyon is pretty representative of what you see all over the world, and you have a mile deep of these layers, about a mile deep, if you mm-hmm. track the elevations. You can see the what are called these amphitheaters. In fact, they identify them if you go on a tour, and they'll give them different names, these amphitheaters. The secular geologist would have to be forced to tell you that these amphitheaters were formed over long periods of time of erosion. That's the only way that they could be formed in a natural way. But in reality, if you have erosion, you would need to have the eroded material close by, and you don't. It appears that these amphitheaters were formed as a result of another catastrophic event after the Genesis flood, of which there's lots of other evidence all over the world. After the layers were laid down, there was all this movement and shifting of geological plates, plate tectonics. We know a lot of this from more recent research. And our theory is, and there's evidence that there were lakes in the Colorado, Utah area that now do not exist. Something happened geologically, an earthquake that released those waters and carved out the Grand Canyon. Not over millions of years, but carved out those layers that were laid down by the Genesis flood in a matter of weeks, maybe even less than that. And in the rushing of the water, it produced these eddies that would have carved out not only soft material, but even hard material, creating these amphitheaters and then washing away that material, because the material does not exist at the bottom of them. So we have a better explanation for the formation of those amphitheaters.
You know, and I said earlier, you know, people need to go and look at pictures of the Grand Canyon. So I did that while we're talking here on the air. I mean, it's a zillion pictures, and the mm-hmm. layers are very clear, and the logic about what you're talking about.
And these amphitheaters are very clear as well.
Yeah.
Very distinct.
You know, I want everybody to know, too, that there are people that dispute this.
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, and
the majority of people.
And so what you need to do is look into that research, look at what people have to say, and think about it. And I think in that process, you're going to come to understand that what the Bible says is accurate.
Right.
And that's
the hope.
That's the whole point. That's the whole point of why we're talking about this is, again, to get back to Steve Collins' point, the Bible is a book of history
mm-hmm.
and accurate.
And the Genesis flood is a historical event.
Yes. Ray Mondragon is in studio with us. Ray is a Bible teacher, an apologist, and a student of creation science. Want to refer you to his website one more time. It's called For His Glory, nm.com. That's Forhis, Glory, GLORY, nm.com. And then also want to direct you to the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico website, which is csfnm.com. Ray will be with us one more segment. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We've all experienced a chance meeting, a timely text or phone call, or an unexpected financial or material gift. It's tempting to chalk such things up to good luck or coincidence, but these are actually holy moments. God's work in the details of your everyday life. Join Geology for Holy Moments, a free 5-week Bible study that starts Tuesday, July 14th at 6:30 p.m. in the Hub at the Osuna campus. There's no cost to register or attend. However, study materials cost $10. Please plan accordingly, as childcare will not be provided. Details and registration can be found online at calvarynm.church.
Summer is in full swing, but so are summer germs. Here's some tips to help keep you and your family healthy. Hi, Doug Chamberlain here with the Samaritan Ministries Family Health Checkup. Normally, we think about germs when it's cold outside, but summer germs are just as active, and precautions still need to be taken to stay healthy, like using proper hand-washing techniques to prevent the spread of germs, or treating your kids' minor cuts and scrapes so they don't turn into a bigger problem later. Also, with outdoor dining, always be mindful of keeping food at proper temperatures so it doesn't spoil. And if you're going to the pool, always wear footwear in locker rooms and don't share towels to help avoid fungal infections. Summer brings its own types of challenges, but with some simple precautions, they don't have to spoil your fun. For more, visit Family Health Checkup on Facebook or at FamilyHealthCheckup.org.
This is John MacArthur with more Portraits of Grace. Are you committed to follow Jesus no matter the cost? Well, that's a question you need to continually ask yourself, because Jesus said, "If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you." Receiving persecution from the world because you're Christ's representative means that you have an opportunity to experience what Paul called the fellowship of his sufferings. A Christian suffering is the very means God uses to transform us into the image of his Son. Troubles and trials we share with Christ, and they themselves can be great reassurances that we belong to Christ. So what should your response be to your trials? Don't be indifferent or accommodating to the challenges you face, but confess your complacency, your compromise toward the world. Thank God for the resolution to stand firm and trust Him to make the most out of every trial.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We're talking with Ray Mondragon about the scientific evidence for worldwide flood described in Genesis. Ray, tell us about some of the other evidence.
Well, there's lots of evidence, and in the time that we have, I'd like to focus on a couple of things. One of them, another thing you can see at the Grand Canyon, and you can see it right outside your door here if you look at the crest, there's a sharp boundary. It's not so distinct at the crest, but you can see very distinct differences between the layering in the Grand Canyon. In fact, I've got photographs of that Coconino sandstone and the sandstone below it, and you can't even, there's a sharp boundary between the two, and the two materials are very distinct. One has this whitish color to it, and the one below it is a reddish sandstone, but very clear. And you go up to it, you can walk right up to it, you can't stick a credit card between them. And that layer, in fact, if you look at it from a distance, you can see it goes miles and miles and miles, and just the sharpness of the boundary argues that those two layers were laid down very, very close together. And it makes more sense in terms of one event, a Genesis flood, for example. Because otherwise, from the secular viewpoint, the secularist says that these layers were laid down millions of years. Well, what created this sharp boundary? Because you would expect over millions of years between the two, if you had time between the two, you'd have erosion. And there's no erosion. Mm. You have sharp boundaries, sharp, distinct boundaries. And that is more common of all of the layers, not just between that, but it's so evident that I like to use it, as an example, and I've got slides that kind of make it very vivid. Mm. But it's true of virtually every area, and it's true of layers all over the world. Now, it's not as clear here at Sandia, but what we have here is that other area that I'd like to discuss that also gives us evidence of the Genesis flood. It's called the Great Unconformity. That's not a name that Christians have given. This is a geological term. In fact, there's unconformities all over in the geological layering. But they call this one the Great Unconformity because there's a radical difference between the rocks above, or the layering above, and the rocks below. It's the boundary between everything above is sedimentary rock, laid down more than likely by floodwaters, and everything below is what geologists call basement rock. And what they mean by basement rock, it's igneous rock or volcanic or mantle rock would be another way of describing it. And we believe, as believers in the Genesis flood, that would be the boundary between what the Genesis flood ripped up and then redeposited in all of these layers. That would be that boundary. And again, if you go to the Grand Canyon and you go through a tour, they'll point it out. It is very, very evident. And if you even go up close, it's even more evident the difference between not only the layer, because it's a layer above, and the basement rock below. You can see it's very, very distinct. And in fact, in that layer at the Grand Canyon, that layer is called a Tapiz layer. It's a Cambrian layer, but they give it a name because of other characteristics. You can find huge boulders bigger than this building that were moved, that are different from the rock below, show obvious evidence of being moved by massive waters. If you can imagine tsunami-type waters and these rocks, these boulders settling down to the bottom. Now, that's not the only thing you see there, but you see other things as well. But the difference between the layers and what geologists call the great conformity is very significant. That gives evidence to the catastrophic event of the Genesis flood that we're describing. So volcanic rock below and or igneous rock, mantle rock, and you can see this at Sandia Crest. Notice the rock below that crest. Notice some of the rock is more vertical than it is horizontal. That is basement rock. That's granite. That's basement rock. And if you look at...
Ray, I'm told that the front of the Sandias, which would be the west side that we're looking at from Albuquerque, was a fault line.
Yes.
And so this was essentially a flat piece of land, or maybe with a slight hill, and that there was a break.
Yes.
And that's why it's kind of a gradual slope on the east side of the mountain.
Right.
Up to the top, it's a gradual slope, and on this side, it's more sheer.
You know your geology. You didn't realize that you had more geology in your thinking than you actually do.
But, you know, the other thing, we've said it 100 times, I mean, there are fossils on the top of that mountain, which means that this at some point was underwater.
These are Pennsylvanian fossils.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. There was a displacement, a dropping of the valley area, and an uplift of the Sandia Mountain and the crest area. And geologically, if you look at charts, and I've got one on a slide here, you can find a Pennsylvanian layer deep down below the city of Albuquerque that would match the Pennsylvanian crest that you can observe here. And down below there is the great unconformity. And in reality, what you see at below the crest, below the layering, would be the great unconformity that you can see in the Grand Canyon. So here, it's up on the mountain because of the uplift. And we would say that would be the boundary. So that Pennsylvanian layer, if you walk out your door and look at it, that was laid down by the Genesis flood. Everything below that at Sandia Crest was formed as a result of Genesis Day 3 when God created land masses.
So, Ray, let's say that you're a young person, just graduated from high school, getting ready to start college, hopefully, here this September. I have a feeling that we're going to be doing a little bit more online than we are in person, but I hope that's not true, but I get the feeling
right.
We are. But I can tell you in my own experience, which was more years ago than I like to remember, one of the very first things that happened is I had two professors who immediately made me try to consider my faith as something I should reconsider.
Right.
You know, they weren't overtly saying I was stupid, but they were telling me that I'm not really using my brain to full capacity and you really ought to think about the positions you've held to this point. And I can tell you unequivocally, I wish I would have had all of this information then.
Oh, absolutely.
They didn't dissuade me from my faith. In fact, I'm just the hard enough headed person that when you tell me something like that, I'm going to go find as many answers as I can, which is where I really started this investigation and why I find this topic so interesting. But I think that we absolutely can defend our faith. And when we consider the Bible is a historical document, not just an allegory or a metaphor or, you know, some myth about how everything happened, it's really accurate. I'm really encouraged by that.
Yeah, everything in the sciences points us to what we can learn in Scripture, not only Genesis 1 and 2, but like the Genesis flood, but lots of other areas as well. So, yeah, get into the science. I encourage people to study science and engineering, obviously. Get into these areas, but you got to kind of filter the secular thinking. You have to filter the secular worldview and look at things from a different perspective. We're talking about the same data. We're talking about the Sandia Crest. We're just looking at a different interpretation of the same data. And from a biblical perspective, I think we have an inspired interpretation that gives us a lot more insight into how to interpret the physical data.
So, Ray, you have a computer. I have a computer on my desk right now. Obviously, somebody put that together. There was a designer, there was a builder, there was whatever. But you would say that a DNA molecule is more complicated
than this computer. Absolutely.
And that speaks of a creator, a designer, a supernatural, you know, I don't want to be cosmic, but that's what God is.
Absolutely.
I mean, He's omnipresent. He's here with us, and he's hanging out in China right now on their radio station talking about, you know, this type of thing.
Yeah. Well, remember when we were talking about creation evolution, I mentioned people like Behe, and, you know, these are world-class scientists, and even the unbelieving scientists that I mentioned, they both will tell you that one single cell is more complex than anything that man has produced. And DNA molecule is the most complex molecule within that single cell, and even it is more complex.
For me, it's as simple as this. We can measure with exactitude all of the ingredients or the recipe, if you will, for a living organism. You could tell me all the ingredients of a bear, and you can tell me all the ingredients of an amoeba, right?
Right.
And a scientist, I think, would say, okay, we're going to take all the ingredients and we're going to combine them in a petri dish or whatever, at whatever temperature, in water or whatever solution, you make it up, and we are going to create life. That is never going to happen.
Nope.
Only one guy can create life.
Nope. We will fail every time.
And what's interesting to me is scientists have been able to steal life. They can take life from a living organism and grow it. That's kind of cool. You know, there's a lot of neat things happening in medicine stuff, but we need all to just understand that our faith is not just based on some cosmic perception. It is absolutely
not a blind faith.
It's historical and it's accurate. And
right.
I love talking about this stuff. So thank you for joining us today.
Well, next week, you want to know what we want to talk about?
Yeah, talk about that.
Next week, I'd like to give you some, or not next week, whenever we schedule
about 3-4 weeks. Yeah.
Right. I'd like to discuss some recent events, or at least one particular one, the Mount St. Helens event. And lots of things took place that secular scientists observed and cannot refute, that give evidence that if God can do on a small little pimple on the face of the earth, if he can do these things on this scale, certainly he could do massive things like are recorded in the book of Genesis worldwide. So I'd like to look at some of the evidence from Mount St. Helens next time that we meet.
Ray, I'm always just so interested, but I want to keep talking. We're out of time. Thanks for joining us today.
I loved it.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.